TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. The Best of Bernie Sanders, High Points from His Senate Filibuster. Today, the War of the Rich Against the Poor. Vermont's independent Senator Bernie Sanders began speaking on the morning of Friday, December 10, 2010, and held the floor until 7 p.m. His 8.5-hour filibuster speech was in protest of the bill that, among other gifts, extended tax breaks to the richest Americans. In the age of the 9-second soundbite, many were surprised that a politician was capable of speaking for that long. Sanders' filibuster was carried on C-SPAN and crashed the Senate service. Bars and pizza parlors carried his speech live and held the audience because Sanders was naming names and giving a clear-eyed report on the real state of the union and the powers behind the scenes. In part one of this Best of miniseries, you heard Sanders report on the jaw-dropping, in his words, $3.3 trillion in emergency loans and more than $9 trillion in short-term loans that the Federal Reserve handed out in secret during the Wall Street meltdown. Today's program is about war, the war inside the U.S. of the rich against the working people and the poor. Here is Bernie Sanders, independent senator from Vermont.
There is a war going on in this country, and I'm not referring to the war in Iraq or the war in Afghanistan. I'm talking about a war being waged by some of the wealthiest and most powerful people in this country against the working families of the United States, against the disappearing and shrinking middle class of our country. The billionaires of America are on the warpath. They want more and more and more. And that has everything to do with this agreement reached between the Republicans and the President. Mr. President, in 2007, the top 1% of all income earners in the United States made 23.5% of all income. Let me repeat that. Top 1% earned over 23% of all income. That is more than the bottom 50%. But for the very, very wealthy in this country, that's apparently not enough. The percentage of income going to the top 1% nearly tripled since the 1970s. Now, all over this country, people are angry, they're frustrated. It's true in Vermont, I'm sure it's true in Virginia, it's true all over America. But one of the reasons that people are angry and frustrated is they're working incredibly hard. In the state of Vermont, which I represent, I can tell you, there are people who don't work one job, they don't work two jobs, there are people who work in three jobs and four jobs trying to cobble together and income in order to support their families. And I suspect that goes on all across the country. But people are working harder and harder. In many cases, their income is going down. And the fact is that 80% of all new income earned from 1980 to 2005 has gone to the top 1%. And I think that explains why the American people are feeling as angry as they are right now. But that is not apparently enough. Our friends at the top, who have a religious ferocity in terms of greed, they need more and they need more. It's like an addiction. 50 million is not enough. They need 100 million. 100 million is not enough. They need a billion. Billion is not enough. I'm not quite sure how much they need. When will it stop? Today, in terms of wealth as opposed to income, the top 1% now owns more wealth than the bottom 90%. You know, Mr. President, we went to school and we used to read in the textbooks about Latin America, for example, and they used to refer to some of the countries there as what they called banana republics, countries in which a handful of families control the economic and political life of the nation. Well, I don't want to get the American people too upset, but we are not all that far away from that reality today. Top 1% has seen a tripling of the percentage of income they earn since 1970s. Top 1% owning 23% of all income, more than the bottom 50%. Top 1% now owns more wealth than the bottom 90%. That's not the foundation of a democratic society. That's the foundation for an oligarchic society. But, hey, rich get richer, middle class shrinks, poverty increases. Apparently that is not good enough yet for some of the richest people in this country. And I say some of the richest, because there are a lot of folks there who have a lot of money who do love this country, who do want to do the right thing. They're not into greed, but there are some who are. More. That's what they need. For example, and this, I think, galls me and I think galls many of the people in this country, the horrendous recession that we're in right now, where millions and millions of people have lost their jobs, they've lost their savings, they've lost their homes. This recession is caused by the greed and recklessness and illegal behavior. Let me underline it. I'll talk about more of this later. The illegal behavior on Wall Street. So these guys, through their greed, resulted in the most severe economic recession since the Great Depression. The American people bailed them out. And now, 2 years after the bailout, guess what? They are giving themselves more compensation than they ever have. So they're saying to the American people, sorry we caused this recession because of our greed. Sorry you're unemployed. Sorry you lost your house. But you know what? That's not really all that important. What's important is that I on Wall Street continue to get tens and millions of dollars in compensation and in bonuses, that I have big parties. How can I get by on one house? I need 5 houses, 10 houses. I need 3 jet planes to take me all over the world. Sorry, the American people. We've got the money. We've got the power. We've got the lobbyists here on Wall Street. Tough luck. That's the world. Get used to it. The very rich seem to want more and more and more, and they are prepared to dismantle the existing political and social order in order to get it. So you got economics and distribution of income and wealth is one thing, but then we're talking about politics. And what happened last year, as I think most Americans know, is the Supreme Court made a very strange decision. The Supreme Court decided that corporations are people. They're people, and they have the right of free speech, and they have the right without disclosure. All of this is through the Citizens United Supreme Court decision that corporate heads can put as much money as they want into campaigns all over the country. In the last campaign, that's what we saw. Billionaires in secret just pouring money into campaigns all over this country. Now, does that sound like democracy to anybody in America? That you got a handful of billionaires probably dividing up the country? Well, we'll put this amount of money into Virginia and Vermont, California, wherever. But that's what they were able to do. So the rich get richer, and they don't sit on this money. What they then do is use it to elect people who support them, to unelect people who oppose their agenda, and they use their political power to get legislation passed which makes the wealthy even wealthier. Mr. President, one of the manifestations of that is, in fact, the agreement reached between the President and the Republican leadership. The wealthy contribute huge sums of money into campaign. The wealthy have all kinds of lobbyists around here, as do corporate America. And what they are going to get out of this agreement are huge, huge tax breaks that benefit themselves. And that is not what we should be supporting. Let me just personalize this a little bit. This gentleman no personal animus to him at all. I think I met him once in a large room. His name is Jamie Dimon. He is the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase. Over the past 5 years, Mr. Dimon received $89 million in total compensation. A bank that we now know received hundreds of billions in low-interest loans and other financial assistance from the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department. All right. So Mr. Dimon received $89 million in total compensation. His bank was bailed out big time by the taxpayers. But under the legislation that the president negotiated with the Republicans, Mr. Dimon, and I use him just as one example for thousands, nothing personal to Mr. Dimon here, will receive $1.1 million in tax breaks. $1.1 million in tax breaks for a major CEO on Wall Street who over the last 5 years received $89 million in total compensation. Meanwhile, there is, just to contrast what's going on here, 2 days ago, Mr. President, I brought before the Senate legislation which would provide a $250 one-time check to over 50 million seniors and disabled veterans who for the last 2 years have not received a COLA on their Social Security. Many of those seniors and disabled vets are trying to get by on $14,000, $15,000, $18,000 a year. The total package for that bill was approximately $14 billion that would go out to over 50 million seniors and disabled vets. We won that vote on the floor of the Senate 53-45. But just because you get 53 votes in the Senate doesn't really mean you win, because the Republicans filibustered. I needed 60 votes. I could not get 60 votes. I could not get one Republican vote to provide a $250 check to a disabled veteran trying to get by on $15,000 or $16,000 a year. But Mr. Dimon, who made $89 million in the last 5 years, will get a $1 million tax deduction. And again, no particular knowledge, animus. I don't know that I've ever met John Mack in my life. He is the CEO of Morgan Stanley. In 2006, he received a $40 million bonus, which at the time was the largest bonus ever given to a Wall Street executive. 2 years after receiving this bonus, Morgan Stanley received some $2 trillion in low-interest loans and billions from the Treasury Department. Instead of losing his job under this agreement, Mr. Mack will be receiving an estimated $926,000 tax break next year. Congratulations, Mr. Mack. You're doing just fine. Over the past 5 years, Ken Lewis, the former CEO of Bank of America, received over $165 million in total compensation. In 2008, Bank of America received hundreds of billions in taxpayer-backed loans from the Fed and a $45 billion bailout from the Treasury Department. What will Mr. Lewis receive? He will get a $713,000 tax cut. And on it goes. And so we as a nation have got to decide whether or not that makes a lot of sense. I think it doesn't. Last year, our friends at ExxonMobil, and ExxonMobil has historically been the most profitable corporation in the history of the world. Last year, ExxonMobil had a very bad year. They only made $19 billion in profit. Mr. President, based on $19 billion, you might be surprised to know that ExxonMobil not only paid nothing in taxes, they got a $156 million return from the IRS. Now, how's that? For those of you who are working in an office, you're working in a factory, you're earning your $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, you pay taxes. But if you are ExxonMobil and you made $19 billion in profits last year, not only did you not pay any taxes this year, you got $156 million return. That's pretty good, I think. Mr. President, it's not just the large oil companies who do not pay their fair share of taxes. I'm getting into this a little bit later. But when we understand or try to understand why we have such a huge national debt and a $1.3 or $4 trillion deficit, it's also important to understand that many large and profitable corporations avoid virtually all of their tax responsibility. In August 2008, the General Accountability Office here issued a report. And according to this report, two out of every three corporations in the United States paid no federal income taxes between 1998 and 2005. Amazingly, these corporations had a combined $2.5 trillion in sales, but paid no income taxes to the IRS. Furthermore, according to a report from Citizens for Tax Justice, 82 Fortune 500 companies in America, I guess that's 82 out of 500, paid zero or less in federal income taxes in at least 1 year from 2001 to 2003. That's a report from Citizens for Tax Justice. And the Citizens for Tax Justice report goes on to say, and I quote, "In the years they paid no income tax, these companies earned $102 billion in U.S. profits. But instead of paying $35.6 billion in income taxes, as the statutory 35% corporate tax rate seems to require, these companies generated so many excess tax breaks that they received outright tax rebate checks from the U.S. Treasury, totaling $12.6 billion. That's from the Citizens for Tax Justice. So, Mr. President, when we take a comprehensive look at what is going on in this country, why we have a $13.7 trillion national debt, it is terribly important to understand that while the middle class pays its share of taxes, there are many, many, many large corporations that not only are paying nothing in taxes, they are getting rebates from the federal government. I'm going to go on to this at greater length later on. But as a member of the Budget Committee, I can tell you, we discuss quite often about how every single year, corporate interests and wealthy individuals stash away huge amounts of money in tax havens in the Cayman Islands, Bermuda, and other countries in order to avoid paying their taxes in the United States of America. These are American corporations turning their backs on the American people, saying, as Mrs. Helmsley said so many years ago, I guess many of you remember, only small people pay taxes. Only the working stiffs out there pay taxes. If you're a large corporation, you got a good lawyer, you know what you do, good accountant. Invest your money in the Cayman Islands and in Bermuda. You don't have to pay American taxes. But by the way, as the disclosure report of last week indicated, no problem, you get bailed out. When things go bad, you will be bailed out by American taxpayers. Furthermore, Mr. President, and this is a point that has got to be made over and over and over again, this agreement between the President and the Republicans lowers the estate tax rate to 35%. Under President Clinton, when the economy was much stronger, the estate tax was 55%. Now, I know, Mr. President, that the Republicans have done a very good job in trying to convince the American people that this is a so-called death tax, that in every family in America, when a loved one dies, the family is going to have to pay 35%, 45%, 55%. I have had people in Burlington, Vermont coming up to me and say, "What are you doing? I got $30,000 in the bank. I want to leave it to my kids. Why are you forcing my kids to pay such a large tax?" So let us be very, very clear. The Republicans have done a very good job in totally distorting this issue. The estate tax is paid only by the top 0.3% of families in America. So what the Republicans have been arguing for several years now is they want to repeal the estate tax entirely. If they were successful in doing that, Mr. President, that would mean increasing the national debt by $1 trillion over a 10-year period. How's that? And all of the benefits, not some, all of the benefits go to the top 0.3%. 99.7% of the people do not gain one nickel. And I want to spend a minute now in talking about one aspect of what's going on in this country that does not get the kind of attention that it deserves. And the very simple issue that I want to talk about for a moment is who is winning and who's losing in the economy. And in fact, in America, it's pretty clear in the economy who's winning and losing. Vast majority of people, working people, middle-class people, low-income people, are losing. That's who's losing. In America today, we have the most unequal distribution of wealth and income in the industrialized world. Mr. President, during the 8 years of President Bush, the wealthiest 400 Americans, that's not a lot of people, 400 families, saw their income more than double, while their income tax rates dropped almost in half. So you got 400 families, all of whom are already multi-millionaires. During the 8 years of President Bush, their income more than doubled, while their income tax rates dropped almost in half. I would say to my colleagues here in the Senate, we don't have to worry about these guys. They're doing just fine. They don't need an extension of tax breaks. Mr. President, the wealthiest 400 Americans now earn, on average, $345 million a year, and they pay an effective tax rate of 16.6%. They do not need an extension of tax breaks. And by the way, for the United States of America, this effective tax rate of 16.6% on average is the lowest tax rate for the very rich in America that has ever been. So we've already given the wealthiest people in this country the lowest effective tax rates in the history of our country. That's what we've done, on record, at least since they've been keeping records. Mr. President, under the 8 years of President Bush, the wealthiest 400 Americans, now we talked about how they doubled their incomes. Incomes is what happens in 1 year. Under the 8 years of Bush, the wealthiest 400 Americans increased their wealth by more than $380 billion. 400 families increased their wealth by $380 billion. That averages to almost $1 billion a family. $1 billion in 8 years. That's the average. Some obviously are more. Collectively, and I know this is not an issue that we talk about too much, collectively, the 400 richest Americans have accumulated $1.27 trillion in wealth. How much more do they want? When is enough enough? You want it all? We already have millions of families today that have zero wealth. They own less, they owe more than they own. Millions of families have zero, below zero wealth. We are living in a situation where the top 1% owns more wealth than the bottom 90%. And Mr. President, that is simply unacceptable. Today in our country, and this is something we must be absolutely ashamed about and have got to address, that instead of giving tax breaks to billionaires, maybe we should appreciate the fact that about 25% of our children are dependent on food stamps. We should understand that in the industrialized world, the United States of America has the highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world. Is this America? Is this America?
That was an excerpt from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' 8.5-hour filibuster speech in protest of the so-called Tax Relief, Unemployment Insurance Reauthorization and Job Creation Act of 2010. The act also extended tax breaks to the richest of the rich. In his last-ditch appeal to prevent adoption, Sanders explained that this bill begins to dismantle Social Security and sets in motion even larger gifts to corporations and banks while doing nothing to create jobs. Bernie Sanders was elected to the U.S. Senate in 2006 after serving 16 years in the House of Representatives. He is the longest-serving independent member of Congress in American history. Before his 1990 election to Congress, Sanders lectured at the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. Come back when TUC Radio returns for more gems and intriguing facts from Bernie Sanders' 8.5-hour filibuster speech. He spoke in the Senate on December 10, 2010. Thanks to C-SPAN for the audio from their 8.5-hour video. Links to the video, to Bernie Sanders' Senate webpage, and to the recipients of Federal Reserve largesse are on TUC Radio's website. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. You can get information on how to order an audio CD by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD order keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail or a credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelerden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.